Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Continuing our run through of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Right now we're up to the episode called... This is not Deep Space Nine, this is Discovery. We're up to the episode called The Red Angel. It's the 10th episode of the second season. Aired on March 21st, 2019. Written by Chris Silvestri and Anthony Maranville. Directed by Hanel M. Culpepper, who's going to get the director job for the Picard pilot. That's supposed to start shooting pretty soon. In this episode, Burnham is stunned when she learns that her ties to Section 31 run deeper than she ever fathomed. Armed with the identity of the Red Angel, the Discovery goes to work on its most critical mission to date. We're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. As you probably have guessed at this point, we haven't addressed the fact that I quit a handful of episodes to go.
Yes, and then you came begging for your job back, like George Costanza.
No, it's actually I've come here using time crystals, which I've just learned is a thing. So this is actually me from the past jumping to the future. So technically the timeline is secure.
Time crystals, I think we might as well talk about a time crystal before we go to the break. The time crystal in this show is the writer's equivalent of TMI, as the kids say, too much information. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about like their parents' favorite sexual positions or anything, but they're like, what is the point of mentioning a time crystal in this context where it's irrelevant to whatever they're talking about and only serves to make anyone watching this go, time crystal? Like, why is there a time crystal? Well, I would accept any kind of techno. I'd be like, we had some circuits that were going or something like that. Not a time crystal.
It's possible it becomes some sort of MacGuffin in the last few episodes.
As far as I can tell, the only reason is because the Klingons were looking for the time crystal when they killed Burnham's parents. That seems to be the only reason that it exists, is because the Klingons needed a reason to chase it down.
Yeah, but I'm saying like in the last couple episodes, there may be some sort of return to having to find a time crystal for X
Sounds good. I still don't. Still not crazy.
I agree with you. Unless it's something that factors into the plot moving forward, then yeah, they should have just said like stopwatch or something.
Even if it ties into it, it's not a very Star Trek. It sounds like a Star Warsy type thing. It doesn't sound like a Star Trek tech. It should have been
an oscillator, temporal oscillator.
Let's play an audio clip. We'll come back and we're going to break down the Red Angel.
Captain, Admiral, everyone. I should have knocked. Although it is kind of pointless. These doors pretty much open right on their own most of the time.
Ensign, did you need something?
I have something. I mean, I found something. So I was reviewing some scans of Irium's system, and I found this weird code, and at first I figured it's just some junk from an old update, but then I discovered it's actually a file that was implanted there by a digital parasite. The file is called Project Daedalus.
Those are the last words Irium said to me.
The file also contains a bio-neural signature of the Red Angel. Michael, it's you.
So after the two previous episodes, which were pretty good, at least in our opinion, or at least the show felt like it was getting on the right track, what'd you think of this one, Clay?
I honestly don't know. Because up until the last couple seconds, I really disliked it. I thought the character stuff was good. They continue to have good character scenes. I thought the scene with Leland and Saru was good. I thought the scene with Culber and Admiral was good. I thought the Spock and Burnham scene was good.
I'm going to push back strongly about these character scenes, I think. So, but go ahead, finish your thought.
I don't know how I feel about this twist at the end. Only because I feel like they played dirty pool a little bit with it. Because if you establish that at the beginning of your episode that they have a scan that can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt down to like the molecule that it is this person, I don't think you can explain that away with, oh, wait, it was her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that's how that stuff works. Not that it works at all because it's fake technology, but...
To turn the tables on you from what you were talking about before the cold open, I I anticipate this to mean that Burnham puts on the suit in the next couple episodes.
I see.
And then it becomes a time travel thing where she is in the suit and they can scan her DNA or whatever the hell they do. And that plays into why she shows up as the person in the suit in the past.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that they're not cheating because the one that they scanned is a different version of the Red Angel.
Yes. That's what I'm going to guess. Yeah.
It's still, I don't know. It's still a little cheap,
I think. And it's just it's a distraction for the sake of making it not so obvious who it is. I would agree with that. Yeah.
I also did not like that opening funeral scene. Cause I thought that was, I don't know. I've said before how much I hate it when people, when characters are defined by other people talking about them. I don't know if I've ever seen such an egregious, version of that than talking at length in a character's funeral scene about a character who had like five lines across two seasons.
How many people get a eulogy? If I was at that funeral, I'd be like, how many people are getting a eulogy about like, good down? I was thinking the same thing.
It's not like fucking, it's not like Spock just killed himself to save the Enterprise here. I mean, I guess it's Arium did kill herself to save the Discovery, but it's not the same thing.
But even then, Scotty was, you know, a decent enough person to simply play the bagpipes and didn't want to talk about it. And yeah. I appreciated that.
Even in that situation, it's not like they did a round robin of the cast talking about Spock dying. It was just Kirk.
I want to split this into two halves. I think that the episode is in two halves. So to give a little bit of focus to our conversation, let's talk about the general plot and then we'll do the character stuff later on, because I think that this episode is, an episode that moves a ton of plot forward because we get a lot of information about what's going on, and it pairs it with a little bit of character work. And I think the plot is actually the lesser one to get into. So if we want to, let's get this out of the way. Like, are you happy with where the plot stands on terms of like the series long mystery or the season long mystery and where we are at this point with everything?
Not really, if I'm being honest with you. I don't know. It just seems like the stuff that they're trying to do here is still so nebulous. It's really hard to really get into it. And as far as like the overall arcing story goes, like saving all life is just such a broad concept that it's really hard to care. Strangely enough, like you think I've said this before, but when you get into this cosmic stuff, it gets really hard to relate to it. And I think that they're doing their best to try and ground it by making the connection or the story really be about Burnham letting go of her guilt for a lot of stuff. But I don't know if it's totally pulling that off, because it's just not, it's not quite as, even if that stuff is working, which I feel like it's not working, but I feel like it's not the smoothest ride I've ever been on.
Yeah.
I still don't really have anything to, the stakes are not really super relatable to me. You know, like they did, think about what they're doing here. In how the thing at stake is the total destruction of all human life or whatever it is.
Sentient life.
Sentient life, sure. And compare how they're handling it here to how they handled it across two 40-minute episodes for the finale of TNG. Mm-hmm. In TNG, you have, like, you feel actual stakes to what's going on. Though they are doing the same broad scoping thing and even goes back so far as to show you like, oh, here's where human life just didn't form. Like there's a relatable aspect to it that I feel is missing here. Because I don't know at this point, can you tell me what questions are left? Like, what are we supposed to be looking towards after this, aside from answering new questions that they are giving us because of the reveal of who the Red Angel is? Like, what is left as the overall drive of this plot?
Well, I think
we're supposed to care about.
I think the show is still playing it off as a mystery. I might be wrong about this. I think the show still thinks that the characters don't know that Control is the future AI. Is that still, like, they seem to be confused about that in the opening scene where they're talking about this future AI came back and infected Arium and Control. And my understanding is that the future AI is Control. Do they clarify that in this episode?
I think they sidestep it by saying that it shouldn't be an issue anymore because they destroyed everything that Control was on, and all of the Section 31 ships said that they were clear, which obviously
is not
we
true.
Now know is not true.
Okay.
But nobody else knows that isn't true. As far as they're concerned, they thought that they destroyed it.
Okay. Is that a... Well, that's my one thing. So I think they have that. They have to uncover the Control thing is the part that's remaining. Like, they have to solve that problem. And outside of that, there's really not much. I think that's the main priority that's left in the show. They probably have to do a little bit of time travel stuff, or they have to reveal, as you're saying, what Kima Greggs from The Wire is going to reveal to us in the next episode. I think that the mystery has been okay. And the problem is what we've talked about in the past before. It's if you're going to do a season long mystery and it turns out to be just okay, you kind of go, eh, whatever. Like, who cares? And the show really seems to want to do these season long mysteries, and it's not very good at doing them to this point. I was totally surprised by the reveal of the Red Angel being Burnham's mother.
I was too.
That was not something that I really expected. And I actually, when they showed her, I thought it was just a Burnham with a different wig on, sort of. Like, I thought it was Sonequa Martin-Green. Who, I was like, why does she look so different? Everything looks very, very different.
Well, my first thought was daughter.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, I didn't assume that it was her mom. I guess I probably should have, but...
I was surprised by that. I think that the one thing that I thought that this did pretty well was it tied together why Section 31 is involved at all in this season, because it's their technology. So that gives a reason as to why they were trying to hunt down Spock and the Red Angel at the same time, because they know what the capabilities of it are, and they wanted to protect the technology, I would assume. But outside of that, I think it's fairly simple, I guess. Like, I think we know where everything's going. I'm not displeased by the way of the shape of the mystery or the way the things have turned out, but I don't think it's as interesting as you always expect that it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about... I mean, Section 31 inventing time travel, I don't even know why it's worth bringing up as being frustrating, but it's just another thing in a long line of, like, okay, this clearly doesn't exist in canon at this point.
They've also time traveled in Enterprise before this, so it's not like time travel is a new thing.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this you know, mech suit that sends people back as far, even as recent as Star Trek V, they have to, like, slingshot around the moon or some shit.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a technology jump that, like, at this point it's like, whatever, this is just what they're gonna do. But I didn't love the story about the connection of Section 31 to the Red Angel, and specifically that part I don't mind as much as I minded the tying in of the death of Burnham's parents and their involvement, because it just feels like retconning to me. And I didn't find it super satisfying. Like, there's in Spider-Man comics for about 40 or years or so, Peter Parker's parents were never really part of the story, because they were just, you know, they had died or something. And then in the 90s, they decided to completely retcon their existence and turn them into, like, secret agents and shit like this. It just feels unnecessary and adds a layer to stuff that feels like it's really tacked on because they just find it needed something new to do.
Yeah.
And in this situation, I don't know. It's just it's so out of the blue as far as an explanation of stuff that it just doesn't feel like it was something that was, you know, planned for a while as much as it was they just, you know, decided to throw it in. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair, but
I think it's cheap, because the one thing I think that it's cheap about is when it was revealed that Leland had done something that had caused the death of the parents, George Al goes to him, she's going to find out that you killed her parents. He didn't really kill her parents. Like, there's no, he seems to feel bad about it. And but that scene in the previous episode played it like he literally drove up to their house and shot them and was like, all right, you're dead now and I've done this. And well, once Burnham finds this out.
That is in line with the problem that you've had all season, right? Which is it's the bait and switch kind of thing.
Yes.
And I guess I feel like they kind of pulled one over on people in this episode that I don't know if I really appreciate, in that they apparently recognize the fact that Burnham seems to be at the center of everything and it's really fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And they just doubled down on that in order to pull off their twist at the end. And I don't know. It feels kind of cheap. And I think that thing with her parents falls under the same bait and switch mentality, where it's like the way that George Yao presented it conjures a certain image in your mind, and then they like, well, not really. It's like he just didn't do a good enough job
protecting them. Like they were doing they died in the line of duty, basically. And Leland, you know, I came away from the Burnham and Leland scene saying, like, she seems understandably angry, but the show better mm-hmm. recognize that she's irrationally angry at Leland. Like, Leland did not deliberately cause their death. He made a mistake, right, which he seems regretful about, but it's not, he's not responsible for what happened in the larger context of, like, as much as any, like, police chief would be responsible for sending a cop into a dangerous neighborhood.
Right. I kind of read that scene. I was thinking that too, but I was also reading that from the scene of, like, what he's telling her is the reaction she's having from what he's telling her is not justifying. What's the word I'm looking for? But she's examining her own guilt of the subject, and
okay.
You know, it's now
just the fact that everything's a lie. You mean in terms?
Yeah,
of like,
she's kind of dealing with the fact that she's been carrying this guilt. She's blamed herself for her parents' death for so long, and that's informed everything she's done up to this point, and this whole messiah complex she has. And so to find out that this was guilt that was misplaced, and this guilt basically ruined her life, essentially.
Yeah.
And so to have the source of this misplaced guilt in front of you and learn that, you know, have that weight lifted off your shoulders, I would punch him as well.
I guess so. But I think that it's a poor character choice to have her punch Leland, because I think that if you're trying to get across the point that she's just frustrated at the situation in general, she should punch someone like Stamets. You know, like, I think that if that her anger is just lashing out and it's not trying to make this connection that Leland is actually the source of the problem for her.
Well, I mean, he still is. I mean, it's still a level of responsibility that falls to him.
But imagine this had happened with any other crew and captain. Is it like an appropriate response for a crew member to punch the captain for what happened? Like
I don't think that's necessarily a fair comparison, because you're dealing with a child who's been living her entire life based on a sense of guilt that she had her parents killed. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not quite the same as if, you know, the police captain came back and said, sorry, I got your partner killed by accident. I don't think it's quite the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's not good writing, because I think that the writing there is bad because it's not layered enough to show you that Burnham is what Burnham is correctly angry at. And I think that it's confusing if you have her attack Leland, because in that scene you're thinking, well, Leland's not really that bad of a guy. He's Section 31, I guess. It's bad in that sense, but he seems remorseful about what he's done. And her reaction, I don't know. It's because of how invented the whole situation is, it comes across as very unearned to me and fake, mm-hmm. and not really like something that you could justify why she would do this and everything like that. But it didn't really ring all that true with me. And I guess that's a good place as any to move into the character work of the episode, which will sort of dovetail off of that, because it came off the Burnham and the Leland scene. I don't know if the character work has gotten... I think that the writing has stayed the same kind of as what it's been the past couple episodes in terms of what they do with the character work. Mm-hmm. The problem I think here is that... I've said this pejoratively about the show before, but the show is really just a melodrama. And maybe it's possible to write good melodrama and have it be like an effective thing. I find it extremely ineffective. And I'm just going to read the definition of what melodrama is. A dramatic work in which the plot, which is typically sensational and designed to appeal to the emotions, takes precedence over detailed characterization.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the scenes here, to me, and we talked about this kind of last week, where we couldn't really discern if the Burnham or Spock scene was good. The characters are talking to each other, and I kind of have a hard time tracking what they're talking about, because I don't really know what they're motivated for. I think the big example here is Culber and the Admiral, who continues her trend of being a plot device. By now, she's a therapist, apparently, yeah. as well. And what were they talking about in that scene? What is his problem? What is going on? And what does she tell him to do? She tells him to walk his own road or something? It's like, what the fuck does that mean? Tell me something distinctly interesting about this. And that scene is purely just melodrama playing on emotion, where he's like, and Stamets will never love me and I loved him. And you're like, all right, love, love, love. And you don't know anything that the characters are going through.
I would disagree with that. I think that scene was pretty clear about how Culber is wrestling with the fact that he doesn't love Stamets anymore and that he's supposed to, because he's falling into the, there's this idea of what Culber used to be, and he is not that anymore. And he is wrestling with the idea of whether or not, of the struggle of falling back into what he is supposed to be versus what he thinks that he could be as a new person, as a completely new entity. And I think the point at the end is that she's telling him, like, you know, you got to do what's best for you. Mm-hmm. And I actually really liked that scene. I thought that one was great. I liked that one a lot, because I thought it was dealing with the interesting aspects of what, as much time as they can give it, because they didn't have a lot of time to give him. I don't know why he is dressing like like he's going out on a hot date, but
it's very fashionable, actually, for Star Trek. He's not wearing bizarre clothes. He's wearing like modern unbuttoned suit, 3-piece suit, basically.
Yeah, I don't know if the implication was that it's supposed to be him actively distancing himself from Starfleet or from the idea of what, you know, the officer Culber should have dressed like, et cetera, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could have done the same thing with a t-shirt and jeans, but his story doesn't get a ton of time, but I do like the questions that they have him going through. And I think in this case, yeah, it's kind of weird turning the Admiral into a literal therapist, because I thought that scene, again, I don't know if it might fall under a bit of a bait and switch, because when he was asking about the Admiral dressed like that and then goes to see the Admiral, I was like, oh, he's going to ask to be decommissioned or something. I thought that was going to be...
Isn't he taken off of his position or something going on here? Like, he's still serving as a doctor, but they make a big show of him coming back and working as a doctor. And I thought he had kind of resigned or something.
I don't know.
I might be wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought he was going to ask to be like moved or decommissioned or something like that. But then it was just like, no, you used to be a therapist. And it's like, oh, okay, well.
This is my therapist in clothes.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you could have that same conversation. I feel like the therapist thing is what is the disconnect for the scene, probably. Because if they had that same conversation and it started with him approaching the Admiral being like, I need to talk to you about possibly transferring or being just decommissioned, and then they have that conversation, it at least exists inside the active world of Starfleet and Star Trek, instead of just like, if it had been one of those scenes where, you know, they show someone laying on a couch talking about their problems, and then they zoom out and the guy's like, dude, I just sell the couches, I'm not a psychiatrist,
right.
that kind of joke.
It's kind of hidden in the relationship that he would have with the Admiral. It makes sense that he would be talking to her if he was talking about resigning, as opposed to talking to a friend.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, there's no reason why he needs to talk to the Admiral about that, other than the fact that she happens to be a therapist all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think they could have grounded that a little bit more, but I thought the substance of what he was actually talking about was good. I like that.
Yeah, I still think it's bad. It's bad because it's melodrama. Like, it's bad because this whole thing is about whether or not he wants to break up with someone. It's like, who cares? Like, this is not...
No, I don't think it's explicitly... I mean, that's part of it, obviously, but I think his whole problem is that he is being tugged in two directions by the what he remembers his life to be versus what he feels like his life is now.
But that's what any breakup is. There's no, that's not any different from anybody's situation. You're a different person in 10 seconds than you were 10 seconds ago. You know, if you go by just like the changes that you've had 10 seconds from now, or you could kind of be considered a different person. He's gone through, apparently, according to what the show, he's the exact same person who just feels slightly different about Stamets. Like, I have nothing else to go on. And if that's your situation, it just sounds like it's a relationship that's breaking up. And so why is he so disturbed by this? It doesn't make any sense to me when the show is portraying what seems to be a relationship kind of fizzling out as something that is like a sci-fi concept. And it doesn't make any sense to me because they're not drawing out or explaining what the problem is in the first place.
I feel like the sci-fi concept kind of supports the problem. Cause I mean, yeah, I understand what you're saying about people being different second to second, but he's literally a newly created organism who had been out of the world for like, you know,
but he still remembers everything. He's not though.
I mean, that's part of the problem is that he is biologically the same person, but he is also a new being.
Okay.
So I think there's a disconnect there that can be read as, yeah, I mean, if you want to say it's no different than anybody breaking up with anybody, sure, I guess. But I think the sci-fi concept is bolstering it. And I think the problem might be that they have so little time to deal with these characters that the only character stuff that we know of is how those two relate to each other. So that's the only inroad you have to explore these problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have any time to spend with Culber, you know, on the job, not wanting to do his job, or any of the other many different reasons that this would manifest itself.
So you think is that supposed to tie into he's no longer interested in being a doctor, or has this event shaken him? See, what I see has happened is the event that he went through has shaken him to the point where he now isn't sure that what he wants to do with his life. Are you saying that he is now a different person who has different interests in what he wants to do? And he's like, I don't want to be in Starfleet anymore.
Possibly. Yeah. Okay. I mean, they didn't bring it to that point, but that's my impression of how it's been going. It's less of recovering from a traumatic event as much as him actually being a new person. Like imagine it like a movie. This isn't an exact one-to-one because obviously he has memories, but imagine any story where they've done something like this, where someone has amnesia and then they get brought back to the town that they're from. And everyone's like, look, this is the thing that you always love. And the guy's like, well, I mean, you're telling me that I love that, but I don't feel that way.
Yes.
How am I supposed to reconcile this stuff?
Why have the direction or the actor choice be play him the same way? Don't you feel that to if you wanted to highlight this, you would mm-hmm. be like, Wilson, now that you've come back and you're literally a different person, you need to change how you're playing this character. You need to be a different person so that it's very obvious to everybody that you are not really the same person who just seems to have a change of heart that's gone on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the fact that we're not spending time with it. It just strikes it to me as they're going for an emotion that I don't think the show is earning because I don't know what these characters are going through. And he's the prominent example of that. I think that the other one that's really terrible is Georgiou at this point, who I have no idea what Georgiou is doing or why she's doing it or why any other character trusts her at this point.
No, I don't know like what her, I don't know if the intent is that you're supposed to be like, ooh, look at how shifty she is playing both sides of it. But you're not, I don't get that at all. Like there's no, I don't get anything from her performance that is telling me one way or the other which way she might be leaning.
Yeah. Well, they always have those scenes where she'll... In another show, if that character was shifty, after her and Burnham talk, the camera would linger on Georgiou for a minute and she'd kind of smirk as Burnham walked out of the room. You know, something so that you know she is being actively deceptive and playing the room. This, it seems like she's turned to a good guy for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Like, I don't see I mean, I feel like that the plot line of her trying to usurp Leland is pretty much dead at this point, right?
Right,
because he turned as well. And like there's nothing in this episode that she does that is any way like subverting him, other than telling Burnham to go talk to him nebulously. And even that, it's just like there's no fallout from that between Leland and Georgiou, and.
But Georgiou doesn't gain any power from Burnham doing that to Leland.
Yeah, and Leland doesn't really lose anything
from
that scene, other than, you know, some blood from his nose.
Yeah, tough day for Leland at the office, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with her.
I hate the performance, too. I've said that before. I hate the performance. I'm not a
fan. Yeah, I hate to... I don't know if it's the stuff that they're giving her to say, but it just doesn't feel natural. And I don't know if that's I don't want to say it's a language barrier thing, but I don't know if she's totally pulling off the kind of dialogue that they're giving her. And I don't know what the problem is.
Well, the performance is too camp, isn't it? She's camping up in a way that none of the other characters really are. And I thought the scene where she, Tilly, Culber, and Stamets are talking about who's screwing who in which universe was maybe one of the worst scenes that the series has ever done. Like, I don't even care that they're talking about, like, I don't care that that's the context or the theme that they're talking about, but it was pointless. There's no, that scene had no reason to exist. You don't learn anything about any of the characters. It's just kind of... Did they think it was funny? Is it a joke scene that we're supposed to get out of that? Because it didn't strike me as intentionally funny. It just felt really weird.
Yeah, I was thinking at the end when Tilly goes, "What the hell just happened?"
Was that an ad lib?
Was that an actual response from the actress after that scene?
Yeah.
You know, the closest thing I could possibly pull out of that maybe is that. Because it involves Culber and Stamets, and the conversation from Georgiou is basically like, hey, not everything that seems so rigid is as rigid as you assume it would be.
Mm.
Maybe it's supposed to play into the deal with Culber and Stamets, where Culber is like, well...
That's the incident that pushes Culber over the edge?
No, it's not an incident, but because, I mean, he comes into that scene looking for the Admiral.
Mm.
But I don't know if it's supposed to be, like, thematically this... idea that, you know, just because you think something is supposed to be one way, it means that it necessarily has to be that way.
Okay.
Which is thematically tied to what Culber's going through, I guess. But I feel like I'm being real generous there.
Well, I guess maybe, because Stamets has the line about, he's like, well, in this universe, in any universe I can think about, I am gay. And so he seems to be the rigid one who's stuck in the way that he's going, and maybe, but that's...
Okay, so I would give that more credit as the cause if there was any sort of visual or otherwise depiction that whatever she just said landed with Culber in any meaningful way.
Right. Andy hadn't come in looking for the Admiral anyway, as if he's going.
And because they choose to end it with the joke, and ending it with a joke as opposed to like focusing on Culber in some way takes out any meaning and just plays it for a laugh.
Yeah. And then. The other minor one I had was Commander Nahn and Burnham, where they talk about what they went through with Arium in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Whatever. That scene is fine. It's the Arium thing to me went on too long. Both the funeral and the Nahn scene went on too long, because all it kind of did was remind me how little we knew about Arium before she died. Exactly. And so it feels very manipulative that they talk about her so much and that there's so much concern about what's going on. And I actually opened up the episode where they just show her face. I thought they had actually beamed her onto the ship, and that's how they were going to get around this whole thing, that she was just going to come back or whatever. But you notice that the actress who played her in season one is now taking her spot on the bridge.
I did.
In season two. Yeah.
I wonder, that made me think, I wonder if they clearly like the actress, but I wonder if it was she didn't like the makeup, or if maybe the makeup was a budgetary thing, because that can't be cheap makeup.
What I read on Reddit that was not sourced was multiple people saying that the actress did not care for the makeup process. So, or she was allergic. Some people said she was allergic. Some people said she just didn't like it. Yeah.
I mean, allergic maybe, but I don't know. I feel like if you're that much of a background character and you're complaining that much to the point that they're going to change the character for you, I don't know. That doesn't feel legit to me.
We love the way you stand back there pushing buttons, pretending to push
It's not
buttons.
Like they couldn't get somebody else to do it. They literally did.
Yeah. They made a big show of it coming on, too. Is it, you know, what a... That felt like a very behind the scenes, like the camera's going to linger on this person as she walks onto the bridge and everyone on the bridge looks at her. And it's like, it's just a person. It's just some character that's going to come on and take her place.
I mean, let's put it this way. They fired well, I don't know if they fired him, but there was another guy who was supposed to play the Tin Man in Wizard of Oz, and he was allergic to the makeup and he did not get the role. So I feel like the actor is a little bit more expendable than the production.
I thought that the good scenes for characters were Saru and Leland, because I thought that built off of something that we know about Saru at this point. And I thought the Spock and Burnham thing was actually pretty good, too.
Yeah, I liked that scene a lot. I also liked the pretty sweet burn he gave her at the beginning, being like, yeah, of course it's her. She thinks she's the center of everything. My only problem with the Burnham and Spock stuff is it's something that has... We've talked about a couple times in that Spock is still kind of a prick to her about her leaving or whatever. But every time that comes up, he's like, nah, it's fine. I understand.
I think he's just kind of a prick at this point in his life. You think it's directly related to that incident that he reacts to Burnham like that?
Well, it seemed to be that way where like they, you know, there was that first meeting where the first time they talked about it, where he was like, you know, you destroyed me or X, Y, and Z. I've shut myself off to the world. And then she's like, yeah, I'm sorry I did that. And he's like, don't worry about it.
Yep.
it seemed that, I don't know if maybe I'm just misreading it. Maybe he is just a prick to everybody. I don't know. But
that's my interpretation, is he's just kind of a prick and, this was the episode that kind of they reconcile about it because of that scene. Yeah. They have that scene where they talk it out and everything. And I think that for the most part, that relationship is the thematic material that is most effective on this series so far.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the playing off of who's the more Vulcan, who's the more human, and this is an issue that neither logic nor emotion can really deal with. So everyone's very confused about how they want to go forward with it. That feels... While I don't think it's perfect, it still feels like it's kind of mashed on to the material, and I don't feel like it was really written out that way as opposed to, well, maybe it was written out that way, but it doesn't, the lineup is not clear with enough clarity, and I think it's mostly due to the characterization that they have problems with at this point, but because we kind of know Spock, I insert things onto him that I don't think that the show has really given me, and so the relationship there feels... Well, let's put it this way. We were concerned about how they were going to play the Spock and Burnham relationship, and I think it's actually one of the better things that the show does at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I haven't been really disappointed by that. I think they've been pretty good together. I do hope that this episode and hopefully this season, the reason that they're going so heavy in this direction, especially in this episode as far as Burnham being the center of the universe, is that it's kind of the swan song for this concept, and that going forward, it's not that as much.
Yeah.
Because before they did the reveal at the end, it was like she was the cause of Spock having a breakdown. She was the Red Angel. She was also the signal for the Red Angel. And I was like, so next season, she's the one who clogged the toilet. Mm-hmm. She's the one who finished the milk. She's the king of wishful thinking. She's the second shooter on the grassy knoll. She's the subject of You're So Vain.
She's the sneeze that caused a genocide through the butterfly effect. You know, like she sneezed and on the other side of the world, the Chinese get wiped out or something.
Yeah, and she's also the face of Wilson on Home Improvement.
See, let's that is a good point. I did want to talk about the whether or not the mother angle works as the Red Angel thing, because what I actually appreciated and that the ending kind of undoes is I did like the fact, and it makes sense to me, and it felt very Looper-ish, the film Looper, where she has to bring herself to the verge of death and has to be willing to actually kill herself for herself to come back in time to rescue her.
Yep.
I thought that I thought that was really interesting. It really works, and it relies 100% on the character has to intend to kill herself, and she has to go to the brink and almost die, because future self would know if that was not the case. Future self would realize that I was going to kill myself. I have to go back in time to save myself. And that was an effective way, I thought, to trap a time traveler. And because it's the mother, I feel it undoes that a little bit, and it takes away why I thought that was kind of a neat little sacrifice for Burnham to have to go through. However, I don't know how I feel about the mother at this point, because all we have to go on is 10 seconds at the end where we see her face and Burnham says mom. So we'll see where that goes. But I don't know. Did you have any thoughts about like the time travel trap aspect?
I don't know. I didn't love it. Well, first of all, she doesn't succeed. She's fucking dead for like 10 seconds. And then she shows up and just blasts her with a ray and she's fine.
Yeah, some kind of futuristic healing, which I guess we're just supposed to ignore.
That seemed kind of weird. Yeah. I guess, you know what would have been more interesting for me, actually, is if...
Well, what did you specifically not really care for, or is this what, if this answer is going to explain what you didn't like about
it? It's just, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of a clever way to trap a time traveler, but like, obviously the fact that the Red Angel exists means that it works, I guess. So why even bother playing up the drama of the situation if it's just going to work? Mm-hmm. Because if the person in the suit is Michael Burnham, and obviously Michael Burnham can't die before she gets into the suit, then that trap is going to work. So why would you even bother playing up the drama that it doesn't? It would be, honestly, it would have been more interesting if like they had determined it was somebody else and they had done that trick and the person just fucking died. And then the Red Angel shows up and it's a different person in the suit than who they said it was.
Yeah, yeah.
That way you actually are surprised that this didn't turn out the way they expected. Or flip it on its head and have them go down to do this and just have the Red Angel be there waiting.
Sure.
Because if... I guess the difference is the reason that doesn't work... If the Red Angel is not Burnham, because if it is Burnham, then she knows that she has to go do this and she knows that she has to save herself. So why even bother getting to that point? Why don't you just cut to the chase and show up and be like, they're going to capture me. It's going to happen. I may as well just do it. But if it's a different person, that doesn't work because there's no connection to whether or not that person dies. Like if it's her mom in the suit. And Burnham dies, that doesn't change the fact that she's still, her mom is in the suit. So, right. Like, the drama for the Red Angel, from the Red Angel's perspective, is there. But the drama for the people watching the show is not really there, I don't think.
Yeah. Isn't that just kind of a larger problem of why doesn't the Red Angel go back to the first person who started to program control and shoot them? You know, like...
Yeah.
I think the problem here is that the time travel aspect has too much confusion. There's too many possible outs and too much confusion about what the time travel paradox would be about doing this, where it distracts you from the melodrama, for lack of a better word. Go ahead.
I think the problem with the time travel thing is that, and I still think that the World War III town move removal is part of it, unless they address that next week, which they might, because it seems like her mom is going to tell us all about her travels.
Yes. And is horrified by what time travel has done to her.
In that case, they've already established the fact that she has the power to like destroy the infrastructure of an entire civilization, because she shows up on Saru's planet and just blows the fuck out of the Ba'ul's thing and takes away, you know, blows their generator or whatever at the end,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So then that begs the question, why doesn't she just show up at Section 31 and blow that place up?
Right. Yep.
But I think they will probably, if I had to take a guess, I think the link to Burnham probably will still remain, where it's like she can't control where she's being sent or something, and the only thing she can zero in on is Michael Burnham and somehow.
Sure. Yep.
Because that then explains
the limitations.
Why the link, and the limitations and why she just doesn't, you know, go back in time and kill Hitler or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, insert your why don't you X here.
Mm.
But yeah, I think, I don't know. It remains to be seen whether or not that ends up being satisfying. Because I still think the why is going to be more interesting than the who.
Yes.
And I hopefully.
Although I thought the who in this angle was actually, to the show's credit, fairly unpredictable.
I agree.
Not to mean that it's good or anything, but it was sort of like, the one person that no one ever seemed to bring up is the person who the Red Angel is.
I had never seen
or heard anyone say that the mother was the possibility for what was going on, probably because the show did not really give you any evidence at all that it could be the mother coming through.
I'm really glad that it wasn't Michael, because just like that to me does not make any narrative sense whatsoever.
Okay. I was all ready to yell at people who told me it was too obvious for the scene where they mind meld, Spock mind melds with the Red Angel, and it cuts back and forth between Pernum. I was like, see, the show can be that obvious, people. But yeah, I was wrong.
I'm so glad. I'm so happy that was and they totally fucked with you at the beginning, too, because when they showed the flashback at the previously, they did show that scene where he mind melds with the Red Angel and it very quickly cuts to Burnham.
Yeah.
So that definitely was meant to be a red herring. And I have to give them credit for playing it. I give them credit for playing it so well, but at the same time, I kind of don't give them credit for leaning into the what everybody says is the worst part of the show.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And it's a toss up, because it's like, it's one of those things where when you have a character like this that's integral to your story in such a way, you have to, the reason that people are picking Michael Burnham or reason that people are picking other characters from the show is because you would assume that the scope of your story is going to be maintained, and it's not going to be like Deanna Troi's daughter or something, you know, something just completely out of left field. So I give them credit for picking someone who is inside the environment of the story, just not as literally as everyone expected it to be.
Never seen her before. Have never seen this character before, but heard about her.
Yeah, her parents are definitely characters in the show in that they are talked about and they are part of the story. But yeah, it's not someone you've ever seen. I think if they had shown her at any point, I think it probably would have been a lot showing their hand much clearer if they had ever actually like put her face on screen before this.
So last thing before we take a break, is Leland dead?
I think he's infected with AI, I think.
Okay.
Because the way his eye went weird after he got stabbed in the face, I assume that means that control is now part of him or something.
Yeah, he must become the face of control. He must become like the physical manifestation of it that talks to the crew and tells them everything.
Yeah, which I knew that was going to have to happen. I assumed they were going to do it with Arium, Even at the beginning of the episode, I was like, I feel like somehow she's going to come back as the embodiment of control, because you have to have that. Otherwise, your entire season is a bunch of people trying to fight a computer.
Yeah,
you know, there's a reason the Borg are cyborgs and not just floating machinery, because you can't really have dramatic scenes with that stuff and have it be satisfying.
That's true. I would have thought it could have been possible just for it to be a Skynet type character that you never really, I guess you need the Terminator in that storyline.
Yeah, Skynet doesn't exist independent of the Terminator.
Right, and I thought the control was just going to be the sort of broad idea of an AI that goes bad, and so Leland is basically going to become the Terminator in this aspect, if not because of killing people, but because he's going to be the one who explains what control is trying to do.
Or maybe he becomes the Borg Queen. I don't know.
It's true. He could. He's out there. He's out
would you,
there looking for
would
romance.
You be satisfied with that if it turned out somehow that this incident is what... Have we talked about this already? I know we've mentioned
we
the
have.
Idea
we mentioned
the Borg,
it last time.
Did we talk about whether or not that would be in any way satisfying?
The further it goes into it, the less satisfying I find it to be. I'm not interested in this spawning the Borg. I don't think that is necessary. I think that... Because the because the modern understanding of AI and like how this is a very current zeitgeisty type topic to talk about right now, I don't think it's necessary to tie it into a concept from the early 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Can be its own thing.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
You want that? You see, you think the link is too strong and needs to happen?
I don't know if I would find it satisfying. I probably wouldn't. I'd probably be like, okay, whatever.
But they'd also have to go back in time more because the Borg don't just start at this point. They've been around for like millennia, apparently.
Oh, they have. Yes. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking like, I don't know if they'd be able to resist, even if they don't make the direct link, having Leland say at some point, resistance is futile. Like, what are there's got to be some odds on whether or not he says that, assuming he comes back in some sort of weird
they'd AI also
controlled thing.
The Borg also exist previous to this because they're on Enterprise. So we've seen them timeline to this point because it's the Borg from First Contact they find in Enterprise.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. The Borg that crash or something on the Borg ship that they blow up in the past get frozen in Antarctica and they dig them up on Enterprise, and that's where
nice. Is that episode any good or is it?
It's
just
okay. It's fine. It's the only Borg episode I think of Enterprise, and they deal with it kind of quickly. But
speaking of that concept, there's something that they dropped very casually that I did want to address. And my long list of things that seem more interesting than the actual plot that they probably won't address again. Leland talks about the fact that they think that advances in technology over the years are due to time travels.
Yes. This is apparently a Voyager concept that I don't know. Yes. So this seems, well, at least the Star Trek fan sites were like, oh, they can link it to this episode of Voyager. And I don't know what that means, but apparently it's possible. Yeah.
So like, is that something that you think they're going to look into?
I hope not. That's way too big at this point. Yeah, you can't start exploring.
It's so huge. Yes, it's literally the entire plot of Prometheus, basically.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you can't do it with three episodes left. They need to just focus on this small story and wrap this up, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. Anyway, let's take a break. We're going to play an audio clip. We'll come back, give our final thoughts, and then call it a day.
What if it doesn't work?
Were you to perish, I would be charged with killing a Starfleet officer again. It would therefore be ideal if you survived.
Such a way with words, Spock.
All right, so that's it for The Red Angel, which is the 10th episode, I believe, of Star Trek Discovery's second season. I wasn't as good as the previous two episodes. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it while it was happening, I suppose. I think the funny thing about it is it kind of took the wind out of my sails in some way because of all the information that we learned, but at the same time, it reinserted a little bit of wind, but I don't know if it's equal to the amount of wind I had before that, if that makes any sense. Like I'm kind of interested in what the mother has to say, but I feel like I can see where the finish line is at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting here was fine. I think that the big thing that stood out to me was that I don't like, while the pacing and the structure of the episodes is vastly improved. And I have to say that the new production team seems to understand that you kind of have to write scenes where characters talk to each other about stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
It's still feeding off of, I don't know anything about these characters because you spent a season and a half not telling me anything about them. So their conversations ring very hollow to me. And I applaud them writing them this way, but they're kind of handicapped because they're writing with the understanding of the stuff that came before that. And I don't think it's strong enough to work with, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think we've probably said this before, but I think the adherence to the serialized season-long arc story thing is a hindrance. I think they've managed to course correct a little bit this season, but I think there's still room to do it even more. Because, I mean, the reason that you end up having these disconnects with characters is because you don't have opportunities for an episode like, you know, Armand Bashir. Is that what it's called? Armand Bashir, the most recent DS9 we did?
Dr. Bashir, I presume. You were right about Armand Bashir is the secret agent episode. Remember where he plays 007?
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
Darren was on the podcast with us about how Bashir is stuck on the holodeck and he's pretending to be a secret agent.
I'm going to pretend that I watched it because I do not remember. Anyway, at least I know that it's a real episode title. But anyway, point is, if you have a little bit more room to breathe and aren't quite as tied to your plot, you have more room to have just character I don't know. Maybe now that I say this, I'm calling bullshit on my own justification here, because if you look at Breaking Bad was more or less a plot driven show front to back, and they still had plenty of time to do that shit. So
no, I get a lot of comments in YouTube comments that say the problem with Discovery is that they cut it down from 26 episodes to 15 or 14 and they don't have time. And it's like, guys, modern TV manages to do this with 10 episodes. Yeah. This is not a matter of we just don't have enough time. It's a matter of you need to write your show more effectively to bring out characterization out of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to try and rationalize by giving them some sort of like handicapped or something, because there are other shows that are more successful with this that do it.
Game of Thrones does more with less time than this show does.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Breaking Bad. Yep. I'm assuming Mad Men
does the same. Sopranos does the same. They all have 10, 12 episodes. The Wire has 50 times the amount of people in its show and it does more with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, not that Discovery needs to be the greatest show of all time, but it is. I'm just saying it's possible to write a show with 15 episodes and have characters actually mean something.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I will give them credit for starting to figure it out.
Yes, absolutely.
I think maybe if I was going to rationalize how things have gone and give them a little bit of slack, I would say it seems like they were just so overexcited about the idea and the show in season one. And they went through so many production problems to get to the finish line that they didn't have time to really breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like they're kind of calming down and figuring out exactly how this is going to work.
Well, in that case, you know what I think the mistake was, if that's the case? Mm-hmm. They did not make a clean enough break from season one, where if I was in that position, I was like, guys, season one was kind of a disaster. I'd say, we have these characters. Let's kind of divorce ourselves as much as possible from season one and what happened here. Like, let's not bring up the spore drive as much. Let's not bring up Jor-El. Let's not deal with all these things that really hinder us in how we understand where we are. And I think that the cases that it works are like Burnham and Spock's relationship, because it's not built on a previous season stuff. The stuff that is horrible, which is like the spore drive and Jor-El and the Culber thing, in my opinion anyway, is stuff that's all holdovers that they're still trying to reconcile. And because it didn't start off on a good foot, it is still just kind of treading water until they get rid of it.
Yeah, I would agree. On a different tack, completely sort of different tangent, I did see that Anson Mount is apparently not coming back after this season.
Same with Rebecca Romijn, right? Which I thought was funny that she's been in one episode and they're like, she's not coming back, guys. It's breaking my heart.
I was going to say, if it was up to me, I would cancel any plans for a Section 31 show and just fucking do Pike on the Enterprise.
Yeah, with Spock.
Just get Spock, Pike, and Number One there and give them their own show. I mean, like, honestly, if you want to talk about a backdoor pilot, they've His done so effective. Much work getting you into all of those characters. Well, except for Number One, but they've given you... they've done so much work getting people over on Anson Mount as Pike and this other guy is Spock, that to just not follow through with that seems like a bad move to me.
And this is not a bad thing, but I think it's really, the further we go, it's becoming more clear that his likability is pure performance, and the writing is not, he doesn't have a lot to do in these episodes.
No, he really doesn't.
But his performance is really sort of warm and inviting and very likable in a way that a lot of the other characters aren't, and it's a credit to Anson Mount. He did a great job with the character and what the material was given, but it would be, I'm not disagreeing or saying it's a bad idea, but it's just, I wanted to highlight how much the performance has excelled that character.
Right. And I mean, you know, just think about what you're in for between these two possibilities. I mean, can you imagine Section 31, the TV show, being any less dark and intense than Discovery? No, if anything, it's probably going to be more dark and intense. And do you really need two shows that are exactly the same like that? So Or do you go in the direction of, hey, let's do the early days of the Enterprise with Captain Pike and Number One and Spock, with a character who everybody really likes already? And
we'll give them the colorful uniforms that they wore for the first episode in this one, and everything will be good.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like a slam dunk to me. I mean, assuming Captain Leland is going to die at the end of this season, is Section 31 going to be like the adventures of awkward Georgiou?
And Tyler too.
Fucking no, man. I don't know. I'm not interested in that at all.
No. Well, let's go ahead.
You know, just like from character standpoints, man. Like Tyler's a void. Georgiou is confused at best.
Yep.
You know.
Yes. I'd agree. The others are mostly doing okay, I think, at this point. Some of them are doing better, though. Okay. Saru is kind
Why
of funny.
Why is Tyler here?
There's no reason for Tyler. He was in jail, and now he's out. But let's not retread. We'll have plenty of time, I'm sure, with Tyler next week. We didn't, you know, well, I will say one thing about them. Tyler and Burnham make out in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Total holdover from season one. Total melodrama garbage, total writing that the writers believe these characters share a relationship that they do not have with each other.
It's almost like Tyler drove her to Dublin after she was going to propose to her boyfriend.
Check out Real Ripe and Real Rotten on Monday. That show will post. We talked about leap year, and that's what Clay is referencing right there. But let's call it a day. We talked for an hour. That's enough. We have a couple episodes left, so we'll get all of our grievances or compliments out of the way for the next couple of Discovery episodes before the season wraps. Thank you very much for listening, guys. You can check out all the social media links, Facebook, Twitter, Discord. And if you want to support the show, patreon.com/thepenskyfile is the best way to do it. You could be like our captain tier supporters, like Stephen Cobb, Sean, Captain Quark, Dwayne Hackett, Eric Johnson, Jay Stanley, David K., Nick Sergey, Nathan Elliott, Michael Pond, Matthew Cutler, Will Yates, Matt Flores, Samuel Custer, Grim Santo, Robert Cummins, Andrew Churlog, Spinobi, Russ Graham, Deckard Speciani, Bradley Killens, Mike Burnett, Matt Ross, Ben Douglas, Cal Barrett, Joy Mango, Tarek Latif. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for supporting the show. And you guys could do a real solid by helping the show out by going to patreon.com/thepenskyfile and supporting us there. And that's about it. Recommend the show on something like Reddit if it comes up. Say, I listen to the Penske podcast, which is a bizarrely titled Star Trek podcast, and I recommend you do as well. That's it. Clay, do you have anything you want to say?
No. If you're in a comic book store and you happen to see a book called Night Moves from IDW or a book called Poser from Waxwork Comics, you want to grab one, I'd be much obliged.
I think that's it. We've got a couple episodes of Discovery left. We're continuing with DS9, obviously. Leap Year is going to be out on Monday. It's our Real Ripe and Real Rotten show where we look at the highs and lows of your favorite Hollywood artists. We use Rotten Tomatoes to talk about separate movies. So we talked about like Steven Spielberg's E.T., which is his highest rated and his lowest rated, which was Hook. That's the general concept of that. You can check out Radio Star Murders, which is a music video analysis thing. We try to figure out if video did kill the radio star. We just talked about Tears for Fears Shout in our latest episode of that one. Anyway, I think that's it. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.